The shiur tonight is entitled Chanukah and Yom HaAtzmaut, a new look. It's a new look at Chanukah. It's a new look at Yom HaAtzmaut. Although that's not necessarily seasonal, but you'll understand why the connection, hopefully, by the end of the shiur. And by word of introduction, I want to draw your attention to an article that, to a large extent, transformed the way many people look at Chanukah from the perspective of a reevaluation of many of the sources, classic sources, as they apply to Chanukah. The article was written by Rav Yoel ben Nun, and it appeared in three places. It appeared originally in a Choveret, which was printed in as a separate booklet published by Michalat Herzog. It was then reprinted in the journal, the Tanakh journal of Michalat Herzog, called Megadim, in volume 12. And it was subsequently published on Rav Yoel ben Nun's own website. It's an article which addresses the biblical roots of a post-biblical holiday. Yoel ben Nun essentially raised the question of, is there a connection between the Chanukah, which takes place approximately 165 BCE, but certainly a significant amount of time after the establishment of Bayit Sheni. How much time is open to debate, but let's say certainly a significant amount of time. Does a rabbinic holiday in the post-biblical era have its roots in Tanakh? That was the article's question, and part of what he addresses in this article we will touch upon tonight, just to kind of put it together, because it's necessary background to understand what I want to address. I, for the purposes of this shiur this evening, I've built some of tonight's shiur around the thesis of Rav Yoel ben Nun in this article, and with an additional component of some other insights and some personal reflections that I think will become relevant as we get closer to the end of the shiur. So some of this may be familiar to some. Essentially, there has been a number of editions of this article republished in the pages of Gush Etzion's weekly Parsha pages, etc. And so I'm not going to repeat much of what's been written. However, I just want to draw your attention to that literature. For those who want to explore the subject further, there are a number of resources to do so. We're going to start from everybody has a source book? We're going to start with the classic sources on Chanukah, which you will find on the first page of sources that look like photocopy pages. Source number one is the classic Talmudic source on Chanukah, Gemara in Shabbos. We're going to read it through. A couple of questions that we will address here. Let's start from the beginning. My Chanukah. I'm going to run through this part quickly because this is very familiar to us. Gemara asks the question, My Chanukah. What does the question mean? What does the question mean? My Chanukah? Right. What is Chanukah? That's the Gemara's question. And before you get to the Gemara's answer, you have to stop and ask yourself, it's a strange question. Why is it a strange question? Nowhere in the pages of the Talmud does the Gemara ever ask the question, My Purim. Nowhere in the pages of the Talmud does the Gemara ever ask the question, My Pesach. My Sukkos. The Gemara doesn't ask, what is or why do we celebrate? What is the significance of in each of the holidays of the year? Chanukah is the only one to which, in the middle of the discussion of the laws pertaining to Hadlakat Neirot of Chanukah, the Gemara raises a simple question. Tell me, what is Chanukah? And then the Gemara quotes a Braita, one of the oldest Braita. That's actually a quotation from Masechet, from Megillat Ta'anit, which is a Braita. The history of Megillat Ta'anit is not relevant for us right now, but the Gemara quotes a section of Megillat Ta'anit that I will show you in a moment as well. So my first question for you this evening is, why does the Gemara have to ask, what is Chanukah? What's the novelty there? Second of all, in the context of asking the question, what is Chanukah, there is a famous anomaly in Halacha, much has been written about, namely the fact that Chanukah, although it's an old holiday, goes back to the time of the Chashmonaim, for reasons which are mysterious, Chanukah does not appear in the Mishnah. It's an old question, it's well known. Chanukah does not appear anywhere in the Mishnah. The only discussion of Chanukah is in the Gemara. Actually, it's not completely accurate. There are references in the Mishnah to the laws pertaining to Hadlakat Neirot. There's passing references to certain aspects of the lighting of Chanukah candles, but an in-depth discussion of the laws of Chanukah is not in the Mishnah, and the Gemara raises the question, my Chanukah? The question is, why is it not in the Mishnah? So there is a thesis that is out there in the world of academia. I don't subscribe to it for a nanosecond, but there is a thesis out there in the world of academia that Chanukah was omitted from the Mishnah because the Mishnah was redacted by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was a descendant of the house of David, and he was particularly distraught or upset that how dare the Chashmonaim, who are Kohanim, usurp the throne from the rightful heirs of the house of David, when in fact, an established Malchut Beit Chashmonai. Clearly this was an affront to the house of David. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, being a descendant of the house of David, was personally offended. So goes the thesis. I don't subscribe to it for a nanosecond, and the reason is very simple. If you know anything about Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, you know that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's hallmark, trademark, character is a humility that is paralleled perhaps only going back to the humility of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara says when Rebbe died, humility died with him, because there was nobody left who personified the concept of humility more than Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. It's fascinating to note that in all of the discussions of the Talmud, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's own opinions, of which there were many, are never brought down in the Mishnah, only in the Braitot and the Gemara. Many, many instances in the pages of the Talmud where the Mishnah will quote four or five different opinions on a particular subject, and the Gemara's first order of business is to quote the Braita, which includes Rebbe's opinion. Because his opinion was not, except on rare exceptions, his opinion was not included in the Mishnah. The personality of Rebbe was so so defined by his humility that I find it unconscionable to suggest that he made an active decision to omit Chanukah from the Mishnah because of a personal affront to the establishment of Malchut Beit Chashmonai. So I raise that as a question. Perhaps we'll have a chance to address it as well. Then the Gemara quotes the rest of Megillat Ta'anit, Tanu Rabbanan, V'chafei b'kislev, Yemei d'chanukah Timnaya, Inun d'lo l'mispat b'hon v'lo l'hit'anot b'hon. There are 8 days of Chanukah, are days in which it is forbidden to eulogize and to fast. It's a quote from Megillat Ta'anit. Megillat Ta'anit is essentially a braita from the Second Temple period that lists all of the holidays during the time in the Second Temple on which it was forbidden to fast and eulogize. A list of all of the holidays of the Jewish calendar in the Second Temple, of which only Chanukah and Purim stayed with us. That's essentially what Megillat Ta'anit is. And then the Gemara goes on and quotes the rest of the Braita. Shinichnasu Yevanim Lehechal, Timu Kol HaShemanim, famous story of Nespach HaShemen, the Greeks went into the temple, they defiled all the oils. Gavram Malchut Bet Chashmonai, when the Malchut Bet Chashmonai, notice the phraseology, when the kingdom of the Chashmonaim were victorious over the Greeks, why is that an odd language? Because at that point they weren't a malchut. They were a handful of of zealots. Right? They become a malchut much later in the context, but at that point they're not a malchut. The Gemara here calls them, as the original Braita called them, malchut beit chashmonai. Again, park that in the back of your minds for now. We will come back to it. Batku v'lo matzu ala pach achad shel shemen shehaya munach b'chotamo shel kohen gadol. They found one flask of oil. V'lo haya bo ela l'hadlik yom echad v'nasa bo nes v'hadliku mimenu shmonai yamim. They found one flask of oil. Great miracle. They lit it for 8 days. L'shana acheret kav'um v'asum yamim tovim b'halel v'hoda'a. Another year they fixed these days as days of halel and thanksgiving. Again, a language that is odd because first of all, what is Lashana Acheret? Another year. If you read Sefer Maccabim, if you read Sefer Chashmonim, it's clear that they set Hanukkah as a holiday immediately. Hanukkah was established right away. So why does the Gemara say Lashana Acheret? Another year. First question. Second question. What was the nature of Hanukkah as fixed according to the Gemara? It was days of Hallel v'Hoda'a. Hallel and Thanksgiving. Hallel v'Hoda'a. What's missing? Lighting candles. You'd think that the main focus of Hanukkah is to light candles, and yet the Gemara says that the fixing of Hanukkah was b'Hallel v'Hoda'a. And Rashi doesn't help us much. Rashi says that the Hallel is the recitation of Hallel, and the Hoda'a is lomar al hanisim b'hoda'a. Rashi says the thanksgiving is an expression of lighting candles. There are other Rishonim who learn that the thanksgiving that the Gemara refers to is lighting candles. Rashi says, no, the thanksgiving here is a reference to al hanisim. So we have hala, we have al hanisim. What about hadlakas neres? What's going on? I'm not quite sure how many questions we've asked so far, but if somebody's keeping track, we'll come back to them, hopefully. Thirdly, I mentioned this before, every chag has its question. Every chag has its question. Most famous question of Hanukkah. Most famous question of Hanukkah is why is Hanukkah, question of the Beit Yosef, why is Hanukkah 8 days? After all, there was enough oil for one day, it stayed lit for eight days, so there was really only a 7 day miracle. You've all heard the question? I'm not quite sure I understand the question. And the reason I don't necessarily understand the question is because the question assumes that they lit the menorah, and lo and behold, it lasted for 8 days. Why 8 days? So there's a myth that it takes 8 days to get new oil. It's a myth. It's a myth. There's no source to that whatsoever in Halach. There's a run that says that the nearest orchard was 4 days' journey from the base of Mikdash. It must have taken them 4 days to go and 4 days to come back. So there's a mystery as to where this 8 day days come from. And if you take a look at the Gemara very carefully, you'll see that the Gemara doesn't say that there was a miracle for 8 days, and wow, 8 days, we set a holiday for 8 days. The Gemara says, V'hidliku mimenu shmona yamim. They use the oil to light for 8 days, which sounds like they were doing something for 8 days, and during those 8 days, they needed the light of the menorah. In other words, my question is the chicken or the egg. We assume that Hanukkah is 8 days long because the miracle lasted for 8 days. I would assume that the miracle lasted for 8 days because Hanukkah was 8 days long. Understand the difference. And to prove my point, or to the thesis, take a look at the source the Gemara is quoting. Gemara is quoting a brayta called Megillat Ta'anit. So I've given you the source down just below the Gemara. You have the first line is the brayta itself. Be'asuim b'chamisha be'yom Chanukah timnaya yom andelo l'misped b'hon. That's the quote from the Gemara. It's in Aramaic. And then beneath it is the brighter, the midrashic explanation of this Sefer called Megillat Tanit, which is what the Gemara quoted. So the first paragraph is a quote directly from, is the exact same quote as the Gemara that I just read you. You can take a look at it word for word, exactly the same. This is the source for this passage in the Gemara. And then, take a look at the second paragraph. In other words, the writer continues where the Gemara stops. The Gemara says, 8 days, Halal v'Hoda. In the Brayta, it says, "V'dliku shmona yamim l'shana acheret kavum shmona yamim tovim." Actually, it's not exactly the same. The Gemara says that they were fixed for 8 days of Yontif. It doesn't say Halal v'Hoda. Those two words are left out. And then the Gemara says the following. The Brayta says the following: "Umara ulasot Chanukah shmona yamim." And what was it that gave them the impetus? Why was it that they made Chanukah 8 days long? Now that's a very strange question, considering the fact that the reason Chanukah is 8 days is because the miracle was 8 days long. But that's not what the Brayta says. It's very clearly not what the Brayta says. The Brayta asks the question, why did they make Chanukah 8 days long? And the Gemara is, and the Brayta's answer. Umara ulasot Chanukah shmona yamim. Vahalo, says the Brayta, Chanukah she'asa Moshe b'midbar lo asa ele shivat yamim. The Chanukah, the dedication ceremony of the tabernacle in the desert, was only 7 days long. Thank you very much. Shenemar, and it quotes Psukim. I'll skip the Psukim for now. Go down 3 lines. V'chei matzinu b'chanukah she'asa Shlomo. Shalom asa ela shivat yamim. Similarly, Shlomo HaMelech made a 7-day dedication ceremony of the Beit HaMikdash. As it says, Ki Chanukat HaMizbeach asu shivat yamim be'achag shivat yamim. Shlomo built the Beit HaMikdash and dedicated it through a 7-day dedication ceremony to coincide with 7 days of the holiday of Sukkot. Tol Shmini Atzeret. Umar ra'u la'asot Chanukah zu shmona yamim. Why was this Chanukah 8 days? Says the Brayta, Elo b'imei Malchut Yavan, nichnasu beit chashmonai leheichal, the days of Malchut Yavan, the chashmonim entered the temple. Listen carefully. Uvanu at hamizbeach, they rebuilt the altar. V'saduhu basid, and they covered it in plaster. V'tiknu b'klei sharet, and they fixed all the utensils of the temple. And they were engaged in that process of the rededication and rebuilding of the temple for 8 days. Hence, Chanukah is 8 days long. You understand what's going on? According to the Brayta, the number of days in the holiday of Chanukah has nothing to do with the menorah, the Nes Pach Hashem. It has to do with the fact that they engaged in the process of the rededication of the temple for 8 days. Accompanying their effort to rededicate the temple for 8 days, the menorah stayed lit for 8 days. But the chicken or the egg was clearly the decision to celebrate for 8 days, not the Nes Pach Hashem.
I remember, tell me if this is correct or not, I remember learning that the 8 days, anytime you get past seven, you get into the realm of Hashem. And the 8 days was to show that after the destruction of the first temple, that God was still with us.
You are offering a philosophical explanation for a historical phenomenon.
Okay.
Granted, acceptable, but it's not the reason for things. Okay. In other words, we can talk about symbolism, and we'll get to the symbolism. But before we get to the symbolism, we have to put the facts on the ground. And the sources. The last source here. Mara, continuing the same Brayta. Mara'u lahadlika taneirot. So what? Why did they light the menorah? It's a very strange question. Ela b'imei malchut yavan shenichnasu b'nei chashmonai lehechal. Similar phenomenon. Shiv'a shpudin shel barzel biyadam. They didn't have a menorah, says the Brayta. They had 7 iron spears. V'chafum be'etz, they covered them with wood, because you can't light an iron spear. V'idliku behemet haneirot, and in those iron spears they lit the menorah. That's a very famous story. It comes out of Sefer HaChashmonaim itself, but it's certainly very different from the story of the Nes Pach Hashem. So what exactly happened in Chanukah? And both of these last two passages that talk about the eight days of the Chag omit any reference to the oil, to the miracle of the oil. So central to the first paragraph, so central to the Gemara, and yet these two versions of the story seem to omit any reference to Nes Pach Hashem.
Important that the menorah is not a kosher menorah, so you don't need a kosher oil. So it doesn't mean.
Correct. It's a psik de Rabati, which does essentially the same thing that the Brita did. I'm going to skip it for now. It's essentially the same question. I'll come back to the Rambam. Turn to page 2. The next myth. Tonight's a night of myth busting. The next myth related to Chanukah is, why is Chanukah on the 25th of Kislev? Why is Chanukah on the 25th of Kislev? So you'll tell me Chanukah is on the 25th of Kislev because. Say it again.
Chanu.
Which means. They rested from the war on the 25th of Kislev. In other words, why is Chanukah on the 25th of Kislev? Because that's when what happened? That's when the end of the war happened, right? Raise your hand if you think that's when the end of the war with the Greeks happened. Okay? Okay, raise your hand if you think that the end of the war didn't happen on the 25th of Kislev. Raise your hand if you thought, before you walked into the shir tonight, that the war ended on the 25th of Kislev. There is, some of the Rishonim bring down this notion of Chanu Chafei, that they rest on the 25th of Kislev. It's historically inaccurate. If you read the Sefer HaChashmonaim, it's clear that the war didn't end on the 25th of Kislev. I'll show you exactly what happened on the 25th of Kislev in a moment, but the war is still raging on the battlefields and on the countryside for more than just past the 25th of Kislev. The war will continue with the Greeks for another 3 years, at least. Chanukah is not the end of the victory against the Greeks. Nobody actually says it is. That's one of the great mysteries. How this became our curriculum of education for our children, I don't know. But the reality is the Gemara never says that the war ended on the 25th of Kislev, and nor does the Sefer Maccabim. All it says is that they dedicated the temple on the 25th of Kislev. Essentially liberated Yerushalayim, liberated the temple from the hands of the control of the Greeks, and at that point set about the business of rededicating the temple, rebuilding the temple literally, and let the rest of the soldiers continue the battle with the Greeks for years to come. All the story of Matityahu's five sons and how each of them ended up dying in the battlefield with the Greeks. Elazar is trampled by an elephant and all of that's post-Chanukah. None of that's before Chanukah. So what happened on the 25th of Kislev? And it's this very strange date to the Hebrew calendar, after all. So if you look at Sefer Maccabim, and here we're going to do just that, you have sources, I've taken a number of sources from the Sefer Maccabim on page 2. The English translation of them is on page 3. By the way, in answer to the question, just to go back to the question of why Chanukah is 8 days long, I said that they were involved or engaged in the dedication of the temple for 8 days. If you look at, on this page 2, you have all the quotes from Sefer Maccabim. The top right hand, I should have numbered them, my apologies. The top right hand says Maccabim Aleph Aleph. Sefer Maccabim is divided into four books. So, book 1, chapter 1. Beneath that is a paragraph that's headed Maccabim 2:1. Do you see that? Mm-hmm. If you look there, it says in Pasuk Tet, V'yata asu et yemei chag hasukot mechamisha v'yasim b'chodesh kislev, shnat 188. In Sefer Maccabim, the holiday was not called Chanukah. The holiday is called Chag Hasukot B'chodesh Kislev. The Chag Hasukot is the only holiday of the calendar that is 8 days long. Chag Hasukot B'chodesh Kislev is essentially saying the eight-day holiday in Chodesh Kislev. This is one of two references to Sukkot in Kislev in Sefer Maccabim. The other, which I thought I had on the page, and my apologies, I don't, has a much more graphic detail, which talks about the fact that because that year in the Sukkot they were hiding in the fields, and they weren't able to celebrate with the Arba Minim, so when they got to Chodesh Kislev, they got to Chag HaSukkot B'Chodesh Kislev, that year when they dedicated the temple, they took out the Lulav and Esrog, and they danced around the Mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash with the Lulav and Esrog, and they did the Hakafas of Sukkot that they didn't do that year on Sukkot. So they truly were celebrating Chag HaSukkot B'Chodesh Kislev. Now is it any wonder that it was 8 days long?
That's what Sukkot
is. That's what Sukkot was. So back to the chicken or the egg question, Chanukah is 8 days long because it's Sukkot. And the miracle accompanied the celebration rather than the other way around.
Sukkot is seven.
No, it's one Chag. From that point of view, it's one Chag.
Why is Sukkot 8 days?
Sukkot, including Shmini Atzeret, is a biblical holiday of 8 days. I come back to the question of why 25th of Kislev. So let's just go through some of the sequence of events of Chanukah as they are recorded in Sefer HaMakabim. Despite the fact that, I don't know, for some reason we never read Sefer HaMakabim. We never study it, we never read it. I'm not quite sure how that came about. But it's a fascinating read. We'll talk about that another time. Top right-hand side, Maccabim Aleph Aleph. First, Book of the Maccabees, Chapter 1. Chapter 1 describes the religious oppression and persecution of Antiochus against the Jews. וישלח המלך ספרים ביד מלאכים לירושלים ולערי יהודה ללכת אחרי חוקים נוכרים לארץ. Messengers of the king went out to Yerushalayim into the cities of Judah saying that they have to follow the Gentile ways. ולמנוע עולות וזבח ונסח מן המקדש, to prevent the offering of sacrifices in the temple, ולחלל שבתות וחגים, and to desecrate Shabbos and Yom Tov, ולטמא מקדש וקדושים, and to desecrate the temple. לבנות במות והיכלות ופסילים, להקריב חזירים ובהמות טמאות, to build new altars on which to offer swine, ולהניח את בניהם בלתי מולים, and to prevent circumcision, ולשקץ את נפשתם בכל טמא וכפיגול, and to force them to eat all kinds of non-kosher animals, לשכוח את התורה ולהחליף כל החוקים, to cause them to forget the Torah and all the laws. Skip down a little bit. Next paragraph, פסוק נ"ד. ובחמישה עשר יום בכסלו, בחמש וארבעים ומאה שנה, בנו שיקוץ משומם על המזבח. On the 15th of Kislev, in the year 145, Banu Shikutz Mishomem Al Mizbeach, they built an altar, they built an idol on the altar. An idol to Zeus placed on the altar of the temple. Uva'arei Yehuda Misaviv Banu Bamot, and they built these altars throughout the kingdom of Judah, or throughout the cities of Judah. What date are we? By the way, we're 3 years before the story of Chanukah. This is the story of the persecution that led to the revolt, ultimately leading to Chanukah. And we are sitting on Tiferes. 15th of Kislev, in which they built an altar, they took the altar in the Mizbeach, in the temple, and upon it built an idol to Zeus.
145 years from when?
Unclear. The dating is not... V'sifrei HaTorah asher matzu sarfu be'esh b'koram, and they tore the Sifrei Torah and then burnt them. B'chol asher yimatzei bidei ish sefer brit v'chol asher yachpotz b'torah dat ha'melach la'amito, anybody was caught with the book of the sefer would be killed. B'tokvam asu ken le'Yisrael nimtzim chodesh b'chodesho be'arim, and this they did with their by force in all of the cities. ובחמישה ועשרים לחודש הקריבו על הבמה אשר הייתה על המזבח. On the 25th of the month, they offered an offering on this altar that they had built. They prepared the Mizbeach with the Shikutz Mishomem on the 15th of Kislev. And on the 25th of Kislev, they offered the whatever sacrifice, pig or whatever it was, on this Mizbeach. את האנשים אשר מלו את בניהם המיתו על פי הפקודה, and they killed all the women who circumcised their sons. ויתלו את העוללים וצוואריהם ואת בני בתיהם ואת המלים אותם המיתו, and they took all the children who were circumcised, and they killed them, and they killed all the people, all the malim, and all the fathers who did so. ורבים בישראל היו אמיצים והתחזקו לבלתי אכול טמא, there were many in Israel who were strong and courageous and refused to eat of this non-kosher food, ויבחרו למות, לבלתי טמא במאכלים ולבלתי חילל ברית קודש וימותו, and they were prepared to give up their lives rather than violate the Torah, ויקצף גדול על ישראל מאוד, and there was great distress in Israel. There's a lot more graphic details in the story in Sefer Maccabim than we teach our children, for obvious reasons. But the cruelty is really quite remarkable. But what is interesting is, all of this takes place around the month of Kislev. Specifically, two dates. The 15th of Kislev and the 25th of Kislev. On the 15th of Kislev, the Greeks go in and they build an altar to Zeus on the Mizbeach. And on the 25th of Kislev, they inaugurate this altar with some kind of sacrifice. Why did they wait 10 days? They set it all up on the 15th, and then they offered it on the 25th. Why did they wait 10 days? Prepare the pig.
It takes 4 days to get a good pig.
Oh, it seems that they were waiting for the 25th. They set up on the 15th in order to give them 10 days for... What do they need 10 days for?
Publicity.
This was not just... this was not a private act. This was going to be in the front of the entire people. This was going to be their moment of victory over the temple. They have finally gained complete control over the Beit HaMikdash itself. They were going to take the Mizbeach and the Beit HaMikdash that had already ceased functioning as Mizbeach as far as Olot Uzvachim was concerned, but now they were able to put an idol to Zeus on this altar, and they were able to sacrifice the pig to Zeus. This was already the culmination of the depth of depravity that they could possibly reach was going to take place on the 25th of Kislev, not in behind closed doors, not... Right? But they wanted the cameras there. They wanted national television. So they set everything up on the 15th of Kislev, and then they prepare for 10 days. Now this was 3 years before Chanukah. Which means you have to stop and raise the question, why the 25th of Kislev? Moreover, let's see what happens after the revolt. Take a look at the paragraph to the left. After the battle, or after a certain particular moment when they were able to liberate Yerushalayim, Yehuda amar le'echav, Yehuda Maccabi says to his brethren, Hinei nikfu oyvenu, our enemies are on the run, Na'ale l'taher et mikdash ulechanche. Let's go up to the temple, purify it, and dedicate it. Chanech, chinuch, chanukat hamizbeach. Vayikael kol ha'machaneh v'yalu har tzion. They gather everybody together, they go up to har tzion. Vayu'u et ha'mikdash shomem v'hamizbeach mechulal. They see the temple in ruins, they see the mizbeach desecrated, they see the gates burnt, they see the courtyard open, they rent the garments, they tear, they cry, they tear kriya, they sit on the floor in ashes, they blow the shofar, they cry out to Hashem. Skip down a little bit. Pasuk Chaf, sorry, Mem Aleph. Az amar Yehuda la'anashim lihilachem et asher b'mitzuda ad asher yitar et ha'mikdash. They tell everybody to go and continue to fight anybody who's left in the fortress in order that they could have clear access to the temple. Vayivchar kohanim tmimim chafzei Torah, and they take pure kohanim. Vayitaru et ha'mikdash, and they begin the process of the purification of the temple. They took the stones that had been desecrated and they removed them from the temple. And they took counsel. What do they do with this desecrated altar upon which they had put the idol to Zeus and upon which they had sacrificed the pig? What do they do with this thing? They had the special decision to take the Mizbeach, destroy it, take it apart, bury the stones somewhere so that till Mashiach will come, they'll figure out what to do with them. They took new stones, and they rebuilt a new altar from scratch. They literally had to rebuild the temple. They built the temple, they built the courtyard, they built the home, the house itself. They built new utensils for the Beit HaMikdash. They took the utensils of the Kodesh, the Mizbeach, the menorah, the Shulchan HaZahav. They brought the Mizbeach HaKtoret and the Shulchan. They took all of this, brought it into the temple itself. They brought sacrifices on the Mizbeach, v'yalu et hanerot asher b'menorah v'yairu b'heichal. Let me read that again. V'yalu et hanerot asher b'menorah v'yairu b'heichal. They lit the candles of the menorah and they illuminated the heichal. Why is that significant?
Didn't we know they just had spears?
It's a medrash that has spears. Forgetting the medrash for a second, I think Sefer Makabim is more authoritative than the medrash in that particular instance, but that's not the issue. We'll get to the spears some other time. But what's here and what's not here?
Candles.
They're lighting the candles.
No.
They have oil for the menorah, or maybe they don't have oil for the menorah, but what's not here? Say it again. The Nes Pach Hashem. The biggest surprise of all in this story is that the miracle of the oil is not recorded in the Book of the Maccabees. That which is the central motif of Hanukkah to all of us, that which the Gemara says, my Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah? It's the story of the miracle of the oil. And they say, for a Maccabees account of the story, the miracle of the oil does not appear. It's not that it's downplayed, it does not appear. The reference to the oil, to the menorah, is right there. V'ya'alu et ha'nerot asher b'menorah. V'ya'iru be'echal, the menorah illuminated the heichal. How? Neis pach Hashem, and it's all there? Not in the Book of the Maccabees. And you have to ask the question, what happened? Now, there are critiques in the world of outside of the walls of this Beis Medrash, that would argue that this is a more authoritative count than the Gemara made it up, and therefore the Neis Pach Hashem is not true. Historically, Sefer Makabim tells us it didn't happen, and we can all go home. And again, I give as much credence to that thesis as I gave to the first thesis about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. That's not our tradition. So assuming that we are faithful to our tradition, namely that the Nes Pach Hashem took place, we have to resolve one of the great mysteries, which is, why is it not in the book of the Maccabees? And essentially what I will tell you is the purpose of this shiur is to answer that question. Everything else revolves around it. That question needs an answer. Let's go one step further. Vayasimu al ashulchan lechem. Vayavidu et haparochet vayichalu et kol ha'masim asher asu. They put bread on the shulchan. And they put in a new parochet. Completed everything that they had done. Listen to the next pasuk. Pasuk Nun Bet. Vayashkimu baboker. They arose the next morning. On the 25th of the morning, the 25th of Kislev, Bishmonavi Arba'im Umeyashana, on the year 148. So we're 3 years later. Vayakrivu Kurban al Pi HaTorah leMizbeach HaOlah Hadash Asher Asu. They brought for the first time a korban on the new Mizbeach that they had built. And thereby began the process of inaugurating the Mizbeach. The inauguration of the Mizbeach in the Mishkan in the desert was how long?
7 days.
7 days, but it culminated on the 8th day with a special revelation of God's presence. The Chanukat HaMikdash of Shlomo HaMelech in the Beit HaMikdash was how long? 7 days. But it culminated Vayibayom Hashmini with the special tefillah of Shlomo HaMelech on the 8th day, in which he brought Esh min Hashemayim. He brought the fire down to demonstrate God's presence in the Beit HaMikdash. So from one perspective, you can look at them as 7 day ceremonies, but from another perspective, there were 7 day ceremonies leading to a culmination on day 8. Come back to that theme in a moment. This all starts on the 25th of Kislev. Why? Ba'et uvayom asher timu hagoyim, on the very same day, says Sefer HaMakkabim, on the very same day that the Gentiles defiled the temple, be'etzem hayom hahu nechnach b'shirim uv'nevalim uv'kinorot uv'mitzotayim. On that very same day that the Gentiles had defiled the temple on the 25th of Kislev, on that very day, they had rededicated the temple, and they celebrated the new temple with instruments and with dancing. They blew up Nehem, and the people fell on their faces. And they prayed. They prayed to God that gave them victory. And they made 8 days, they celebrated the dedication of the Mizbeach. Vayakrivu olot besimcha. And they rejoiced over the sacrifices that they brought. Take a look, two psukim down, pasuk nun chet. Mikuyam Yehuda ve'achav v'chol kahal Yisrael liyot yemei Chanukat ha-mizbeach na'asim b'moadam shana b'shana yamim shmona miyom chamisha v'yosim l'chodesh kislev b'simcha v'gil. And they set in place an 8 day festival from that day forward, 8 days of celebration over the dedication of the temple. So I come back to the question. Why is Hanukkah on the 25th of Kislev? Because the Hashmonaim coordinated, and not by accident, coordinated the dedication ceremony of the temple, the eight day Hanukkah Mizbeach, to coincide with the very day that the Gentiles, the Greeks, had used to defile the temple. So the question that we have to ask is to go one step backwards. Namely, why did the Greeks choose that day? That's the question. Why did the Greeks choose the 25th of Kislev? And this is where Avyor Benun connects the story of Hanukkah and Sefer Maccabim to a passage in Sefer Chagai. If you turn to the very last page that you have, I'm going to try to do this in this next part in what I call the Rashi Prakim, is sort of chapter headings. There's more here than we will have time to address, but as I said, there's a number of places where this piece of it is written up, both in Rav Yohanan's original article as well as in subsequent English versions of it that have been published over the years. So I will just summarize. Essentially, the story focuses around two chapters, the two chapters of the Book of Chagai. Book of Chagai, there are three prophets who live during the return of the Second Temple, or return of the Babylonian exiles, and the beginning of the construction of the Second Temple. They are Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, as they're known in English, the last three Nevi'im in biblical history. They overlap with each other, and to a large extent you have to look at them and read them in overlap. We're not going to do so, maybe a couple of pieces here and there, but essentially the two chapters of Sefer Chagai are relevant for our discussion. They all take place in 3 months, essentially a span of 3 months' time. The background to the story is as follows. Dayavesh is the Persian king, follows, without getting into the chronology of it, because it's complicated, and we're actually doing it Wednesday night in the Gemara Shir. If you want, you're welcome to join us, and you'll get the more in-depth version. The Jews are allowed to come back to Israel after the exile the exile to Babel. Babylon is conquered by Persia. Cyrus, king of Persia, makes an edict allowing the Jews to return to their land and build the temple. Famous declaration of Koresh, beginning of Sefer Ezra. Things don't go well, however. The Jews begin to build the temple, but there's a local indigenous population in the land of Israel that are not happy that the Jews have returned, and they start causing trouble. What kind of trouble do they cause? They ask them if they can build the temple with them, make it a partnership, let's share the temple. And when the Jews say, no, this temple belongs to the Jews, it doesn't belong to the Gentiles, they get very upset. They send a letter to Cyrus saying that the Jews are rebelling against Persia. Their authorization to build the temple was not an authorization for self-government or for independence. It was an authorization to build a temple in a land that was defined as a province of Persia. Cyrus is still their king. They are subjects of Persia. And when Cyrus hears from these local indigenous populations that the Jews are rebelling, quote unquote, he immediately rescinds his edict. He shuts down any possible construction of the temple, and the Jews are sitting with an unconstructed temple. The declaration of Cyrus is rescinded. Whoever the numbers are, 20,000, 40,000 of the Jews are sitting in the land of Israel, and that's the status quo. Until the second year of Dayavesh. In the second year of Dayavesh, Chagai HaNavi comes along. Dayavesh is the king subsequent to Koresh. Whole discussion whether Achashverosh is in between them or not, leaving that issue out for now. It's a Purim discussion, not a Hanukkah discussion. The second year of Dayavesh, Chagai HaNavi comes to them on Rosh Chodesh Elul, and he says the following. Back page. Bishnat Shtayim l'Dariyavesh HaMelech. בשנת שתיים לדייבש המלך, בחודש השישי, ביום אחד לחודש, in the second year of the Yavish the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month. What are we talking? What day are we? Rosh Chodesh? Elul. היה דבר השם ביד חגי הנביא הזו בבל בן שלטיאל פחת יהודה ואל יהושע בן יהוצדק הכהן הגדול למור. The נבואה comes to two individuals. They are Zerubbabel ben Shaltiel, Pachat Yehuda, and Yeshua ben Yotzadak, Kohen HaGadol. What is a pachva? Pachva is a governor. It's a political position, an appointment of Persia. In other words, the Jews have a local regional leader. That local regional leader is named Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel. He is appointed by king of Persia. So his authority comes from Persia. He's the local, he's the top political position. He's not a king, because he can't have a king in a province of the empire, but he's the local governor. Second, to separate from him, you have an individual known as Yeshua ben Yotzadak. He is the Kohen HaGadol, the high priest. Koma Hashem Tzvakot Lemor, Ha'am Hazeh Omru, Lo Et Bo Et Bet Hashem Lehibbanot. The people are sitting and saying, it's not time yet to build the temple. Now, why are the people saying it's not time to build the temple? Why are the people saying it's not time to build the temple? Because Cyrus said no. And the Jews are good, loyal subjects of the ruling power. When the ruling power says yes, you build. When the ruling power says no, you don't build. Simple. Simple equation. Lo et bo et bet Hashem lehibanot. Not time yet to build the temple. V'idva Hashem biyad Chagai Hanavi Lemor, says God to Chagai, Ha'et lachem atem lashevet b'fatachem sfunim v'abayit hazeh charet. Tell me, is it time for you to sit in your wonderful paneled homes and for the temple to lay in ruins? Are you going to live in your villas in Caesarea and let the temple stay in ruins? It's not time to build the temple, but your villas you can build. V'ata koma Hashem tzvakot simu levavchem al darchechem. Now says God, listen carefully. Pay attention. What have you accomplished here? Zratem harbe vave ma'at, achol ve'en l'sova, shato ve'en l'shochra, lavosh ve'en l'chomlo. Guess what? You're planting seeds in the ground, but you're not producing food. You're making clothes, you're not warmed by them. You're drinking, you're not satiated. Why not? Because there's a terrible drought in Israel, and there's a terrible famine in Israel, and there's a terrible shortage of food in Israel. And the Navi says to them, you know why? I got news for you. You want to know why there's a famine in Israel? I'll tell you. It's because you're all sitting in your homes, and the temple is lying in ruins. Ko amar Hashem tzvakot, simu levavchem al darchechem, pay attention. Alu ahar, you want to stop the famine? Go up to the mountain. Vavetem etz. Go take wood, uvanu abayit, and go build the temple. Ve'ertzebo, I will desire it. Listen to the next word carefully. Ve'ekavda, amar Hashem, and I will be honored by it. I will. Right, that will bring kavod. Remember that phrase. We will come back to it. And then, if you do that, then this famine will end, and you will have food, and you will have drink, and you will be successful, and the rest of the psukim I'm going to skip for now. All of that is on the first of Elul. So they indeed begin, they Vayishma Zerubbabel, Vayishma Yotzadak, they begin, Yoshua, they agree, and they begin the campaign, they begin the process of building the temple, or preparing the materials for the construction of the temple. Skip down to chapter 2. Bashvi'i be'asim ve'chad l'chodesh. On the 7th month, on the 21st of the month. What day are we now? 7th day of Sukkot, also known as?
Hoshana Rabbah.
Hayat Dvar Hashem El Chagai Hanavi Lemo. The next Nevu of Chagai. Amon Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel, Pachat Yudah v'Yehoshua ben Yotzadak, Kohen HaGadol v'Shelit Am Lemor. Go tell Zerubbabel and Yehoshua and the people saying the following. Mi bachem anishar asher ra'at habayit hazeh bichvodo harishon. Who from amongst you is still a survivor of the first temple. Anybody here a survivor of the first temple, remembers the first temple? It was only 70 years ago. Uma atem ro'im? What do you see now? Halo kamo ka'ayin be'enichem. What you see is that in your eyes it looks like nothing. First of all, there was nothing built yet. So it looks like nothing because there was nothing built. But there was something else here that those who remembered the first temple were concerned about and said, this will never amount to anything. This will never be what it's supposed to be. In Sefer Ezra, the same story appears. You have it in the first source on the page, on the opposite side of the page, but I'll just tell it to you for now. In the same story in Ezra describes this situation where they're building the temple, and they're celebrating. They're singing and they're dancing and they're celebrating. And at the same time that the Jews were celebrating the building of the temple, there's another group of Jews at that moment who are standing there and crying. And Ezra describes the fact that you couldn't discern the sounds of the tears and the cries from the sounds of the laughter and the joy. Because they were both crying and laughing at equal levels. From the mixed emotions, the younger generation that never saw the first temple was celebrating, look what we've achieved, the Beit HaMikdash, and the older generation that had seen the first temple, were crying because Kamo ka'efes ka'ayim be'enechem. This was nothing. It was a shell. It was an empty shambles. It was a shadow of what the first temple was. And they hadn't built a single thing yet. They had not laid a foundation stone yet. So what's concerning them, what's causing them to cry, certainly has nothing to do with how beautiful this Beit HaMikdash is going to be. We're not talking about the external beauty of the temple. There's something else that's going on here that is causing all of those who saw the first temple to cry at the construction that is about to take place. To which the Navi says to them, Ata, chazak Zerubbabel. Be strong, Zerubbabel. Nu Hashem. V'chazak Yehoshua ben Yehotzadak Kohen HaGadol. And be strong, Yehoshua ben Yehotzadak. V'chazak kol ha'am ha'aretz, and be strong, you all the people of the land. Pasuk Vav. Ko ama Hashem tzvakot, od achat ma'ati. Just wait. In a very short period of time. In just a few short period of time. How short? Take a look at Rashi on that pasuk. Rashi says, "Bimecha shmoneim." It was Rashi that linked to this parak, the story of Chanukah. Od echad ma'ati va'ani mar'ish et ha'shamayim v'et ha'aretz v'et ha'yam v'et ha'chareba. And I will cause an earthquake. I will cause a noise that will shatter the foundations of the world. V'rashti et kol ha'goyim uva'or chemdat kol ha'goyim emileti. I will cause an earthquake, I will uproot, I will cause a noise that will reverberate to all the nations of the world. Umileti et habayit hazeh kavod. I will fill this house with honor. Pasuk Tet. Gadol yeh kavod habayit hazeh ha'acharon min ha'rishon. The glory, the kavod, the honor of this temple will be greater than that of the first temple. For all of those who are standing and crying, don't worry. Gadol yeh kavod habayit hazeh ha'acharon min ha'rishon. This temple will be greater than the first. V'makom hazeh eten shalom ne'um Hashem tzvakot. And in this place there will be peace. Halavai, halavai. All of that on the 24th of, on the 27th of Tishrei. What does Chagai mean when he talks about kavod? And he says it 1, 2, 3, 4, times in this parak. What does he refer to when he refers to the kavod of the bayit? Excuse me? When we talk about the Beit HaMikdash, what do we refer to when we talk about Kvod Hashem? Turn the page over for a moment. I'll come back to this psukim. We're not finished with Kaga, but just turn the page over for a moment. Look at sources 10, 11, and 12. When they built the Mishkan in the desert, Vayishkon Kvod Hashem, oh sorry, this is Marmar HaSinai. Vayishkon Kvod Hashem al HaSinai. The Kvod Hashem, the glory of God, rested on HaSinai. What is that a reference to? The Shechina. Vayechaseu Ha'anan Sheshit Yamim. And the cloud covered it for 6 days. How did the Shechina manifest itself? Umare Kvod Hashem Ke'esh Ochelet Beroshaha. The Kvod Hashem manifested itself as a consuming fire on the top of the mountain. The truth of the matter is that every time they had a vision of Kvod Hashem, it always manifested itself as a fire or as a cloud. But you understand, of course, that the cloud is connected to the fire. Why? Because the cloud is smoke created by the fire. The fire consumes and the cloud protects, but essentially they are two manifestations of the same phenomena. One is a form of din, the other is a form of rachman, but they essentially are two halves of the same coin, the Eish and the Anan. Kvod Hashem. When they built the Mishkan at the very end of Sefer Shemot, Vayichas he'anan et o'al mo'ed u'chvod Hashem malet ha'mishkan. They completed the construction of the Mishkan and the Kvod Hashem filled the Mishkan. Remember that 8-day ceremony of dedication of the temple? Of the tabernacle in the desert. 7 days of Yemei Miluim, and on the 8th day, what was supposed to happen? Vayomer Moshe, Zeh Adavar Asher Tzivah Hashem Ta'asu V'Yira Elechem Kvod Hashem. This you shall do today, because on today, Kvod Hashem will appear to you. How? They brought the altar, the offering on the altar in the courtyard of the temple, and Vateitze Esh V'Lifnei Hashem V'Tochal Al Mizbeach, the fire that went out from the Holy of Holies and consumed on the altar. Every time that there was an appearance of Kvod Hashem, every time there's an appearance of Kvod Hashem in the Tanakh, in Chumash, it's always in the context of either the Esh or the Anan, but more often than not, the Esh. From Moshe at the burning bush, to Har Sinai, to the Mishkan. So when Haggai says to the people who are crying, because the temple is missing something fundamental, and he promises them, don't worry, ikavda, I will have kavod in this mikdash. Don't worry. Gadol yeh kavod abayit hazeh achanon min harishon, the kavod of this temple will yet outshine the kavod of the first temple. What's he talking about? He's talking about the how much gold and silver is in the temple? He's talking about the Shechina. He's talking about the fact that Bayit Sheni was built without the Shechina. And the people who stood there and who remembered the first temple understood that this temple is a shell. It's an empty structure. It's missing the power pack. I've often described the Beit HaMikdash as the magic kingdom. 10 nisim that take place in the Beit HaMikdash on a daily basis. It's the magic kingdom. But the magic kingdom needs a power pack. And the power pack is the Shechina. The Shechina rests on the Kruvim, and the Kruvim rest upon the Aron, and the Aron in the first Beit HaMikdash sat in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In the second Beit HaMikdash, the Aron sat in, nobody's not quite sure, some say it's in Algeria, some say it's in Egypt, some say it's in Ethiopia, many places where it could be, but one place it wasn't. And that was in the Beit HaMikdash. And they're standing there, the old-timers are standing there crying. How do you build a Beit HaMikdash without a Kodesh HaKadoshim? Without an Aron? Without the Shechina? What are you building, a temple? Are you building a structure? You're building a wall. But you're not building a Mikdash. And Haggai promises them, don't worry. If all goes according to plan, the kavod, the shechina of this Beit HaMikdash will yet outshine the shechina of the first Beit HaMikdash. Don't worry. It will happen. Maybe. Assuming that all goes according to plan. Of course, we know that the result of Beit Sheni was that nothing went according to plan. And the nevuah of Haggai never came to fruition until Odechad Ma'ati, Haggai said, in another few years. What he meant was not 200 years later. But the reality is, says Rashi, that what Haggai prophesied, what Haggai predicted, didn't take place until Yimei Chashmon. Let's go back to Haggai for a moment. Last paragraph. Two paragraphs. Pasuk Yud. The next Nevuah takes place in Sefer Haggai be'esrim ve'arba'al ha'tshi'i. On the 24th of Kislev. Interesting date. Otherwise known as? Erev Chanukah. Same year, Shnat Shnayim L'dayavish. The first part of this paragraph I'm going to skip. It's a complex issue related to Tuma and Hilchos Beis HaMikdash. The basic message of it is that instead of famine, they now have abundance. They have so much food that the boundaries have been pushed away, and the food is literally overflowing. Pasuk Tetvav, Ata simul na levavchem, min hayom hazeh v'mala. Pay careful attention today, from this day forward. Miterem sum even al even be'echal Hashem. Before any stone was laid upon another stone in the temple of God. And again, a pasuk yitchet. Simun halavavchem min hayom hazeh v'mala. Pay careful attention from this day forward. Miyom esrim yarba ala tshi'i for the 24th of Kislev. Lemin hayom asher yusad echal Hashem. Simul levavchem. The day of the laying of the foundation stone in the temple of God. We have a fixed date for the beginning of the construction of the second temple. The foundation stone was laid on the 24th of Kislev. And the first stone of the structure of the Beit HaMikdash was brought the next morning. Terem sum even al even. Which means that the anniversary of the beginning of the construction of the Beit HaMikdash is the anniversary of the beginning of the construction. The foundation is laid on the 24th, the ceremony is on the 24th, and the temple construction begins on the 25th of Kislev. Years later, the Greeks walk into the Beit HaMikdash and they plan a public defilement. They finally have gained complete and total control over this temple, which has been the seat of the rebellion against Greece for so long. They finally have complete control. What do? They are going to place an altar to Zeus on this Mizbeach, and they're going to finally and totally eradicate any Jewish remnant of this Mikdash. When? On the anniversary of its construction. On the anniversary of its construction, the Greeks will demonstrate once and for all who is in control of this Mikdash. See, that is exactly the issue. Who was always in control of this Mikdash? When Koresh allowed the Jews to come back and build the temple, who was in control of the temple? Koresh. We were in control of the temple. What control did we have? When Koresh said build, we built. And when Koresh said don't build, we didn't build. And Haggai comes to the people and says, Rabbosai, you're all sitting in your villas and waiting for what? What are you waiting for? You're waiting for permission from Persia. I got news for you. And if the permission doesn't come, you can't build a temple under foreign occupation and foreign power and rule. It's anathema. It's a contradiction in terms. By definition, the temple can only be built in a position of Jewish sovereignty. Look at the last paragraph of Haggai. Vayi dvar Hashem shinit el Haggai b'24 lachodesh. Second nevuah, when? On the same day, 24th of Kislev. They're building the temple. They dedicated they cut the ribbon on the foundation. Tomorrow they start construction. And at that moment, Haggai says the following nevuah: Amor el Zerubbabel b'chat Yehuda, go tell Zerubbabel, governor of Judah. Ani marish et hashamayim v'et haaretz. Same expression. I'm going to shake the foundations of heaven and earth. How? Vafachti kisei mamlechot. I will uproot the thrones of sovereignty. Vishmadati chozek mamlechot agoyim. I will throw away the strength of the empires of the nations of the world. I will destroy foreign powers. I will destroy their chariots. I will take you, Zerubbabel, my governor, my servant. And I will transform you into a seal. A seal is another way of saying a king. Sefer Zechariah is not about the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash is the symptom. Zechariah is about Jewish sovereignty. It's about how. It's about who authorizes the construction of the temple. If you have to wait for Koresh's permission, then you don't have Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel. And you can't build a Mikdash without Jewish sovereignty. And so Haggai says to the people now, when Koresh rescinded the edict, when you don't have permission from Koresh to build, now you build. Or else you forever understand that this Mikdash is nothing more than a satellite Mikdash of the king of Persia. And when they begin the construction of the Mikdash, Haggai says, now you have the potential to establish what? To establish Malchut Yisrael. To throw off the shackles of the kingdom of Persia and to establish Jewish sovereignty for the first time since the exile. Rabosai, there's a fundamental theme that runs through Tanakh. The Beit HaMikdash is a palace. It's a palace of the King of Kings. But it's a palace of the King of Kings that is inexorably linked to the existence of Jewish sovereignty and the King of Israel. And you can't have one without the other. You can't build a Beit HaMikdash without a Melech, and you can't have Malchut without a Mikdash. They are interconnected. Because our whole notion of Jewish sovereignty is to establish a kingdom that is loyal to Kadosh Baruch Hu, but manifest through Jewish sovereignty. Those two axioms are interconnected. I'll show you an interesting observation. Turn the page over for a moment. For those of you who were with us in the Kohelet class on Monday night, I showed you this passage once before. When David HaMelech wants to build the Beit HaMikdash, God says to him, no. Why not? So there's a myth, somewhat of a myth, that the reason he's not allowed to build the Mikdash is because he has blood on his hands. It's a myth. Never says so. That's not exactly correct. It says so, but it says so in Divrei Hayamim, not in Sefer Shmuel. It says so because Shlomo HaMelech, when he tells the people why his father wasn't allowed to build the temple, He says to the people, my father was denied to build the temple because my father had blood on his hands. But that's not what the prophet says to Shlomo. Says to David. What the prophet says to David is, in Source 14, Shmuel Bet Perek Zayin, you, my servant, have desired, Amarta el Avdi, come, lech ve'amarta el Avdi el David, go say to my servant David, Koma Hashem ha'atati neli bayit l'shifti, you want to build a house for me to dwell in? I have not dwelt in a home since, in a house since we left Egypt, only in a mishkan, in a tabernacle, in a tent. The next paragraph talks about David's appointment as taken from the as a shepherd and transformed into the leader of Israel. Pasuk Yud Aleph. God says to David, I have taken you, I have made you king of Israel, leader of Israel. God will build you a house. Who's building whom a house? David wants to build God a house. God says, I will build you a house. The one who will seed after you, the one who will sit on your throne, I will establish his throne. Who yivne bayit lishmi? He will build a house. What essentially has God said to David? You know why David can't build the temple? Because the temple can only be built by a bona fide melech. And David HaMelech doesn't qualify as a Melech. Why not? Because a Malchus needs a dynasty. The difference between a Melech and a Shofet is that a Shofet is a single appointment of one generation. A Melech is a dynasty from generation after generation. Saul was appointed the first king of Israel, but he was demoted to the status of a Shofet. David does not become the first king of Israel until Shlomo sits on his throne. Then David becomes the first king of Israel, retroactively. God's answer to David is, I will build your bayit first, referring to the dynasty, and then you can build me my bayit. The Beit HaMikdash is a palace, and it can only be built by a melech. And can only be built under a state of Jewish sovereignty and autonomy. When Shlomo Melech sits on the throne of David, it's an amazing verse. On the bottom, in Source 15 and 16, in Sefer Melachim, it says, "Ushlomo yashav al kisei David." Shlomo sat on David's throne. It's a frightening pasuk, but it's the same pasuk in Divrei Hayomim. Exact same pasuk. Vayeshev Shlomo al kisei Hashem lemelech tachat David aviv. Solomon sat on David's throne. Solomon sat on the throne of God. Malchut Hashem and Malchut Yisrael are interconnected. It's one palace. Shlomo Melech built the palace of the king and the Beit HaMikdash in one complex with one wall around both of them. And one dedication ceremony for both. Because the people understood the Beit HaMikdash was a palace, it represented Malchut Hashem, and Malchut Hashem rests on top of Malchut Yisrael. Malchut Yisrael is the vehicle for the manifestation of Malchut Hashem. Bayit Sheni, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, they're watching the people in tears as they build this Mikdash. The young generation, they're clapping, they're dancing, they're singing in the streets. We built ourselves a Beit HaMikdash. And the older generation who saw the first Beit HaMikdash and who understood that they're missing a fundamental component besides the Aron HaKodesh. The Aron is only a piece of it. What are they missing? They're missing Jewish sovereignty. They're Persian subjects. The chutzpah to build the Beit HaMikdash is subjects of Persia. Haggai says to them, don't worry, I'm going to turn this place upside down. You build the Beit HaMikdash. Without Persian authority? Yes, build it without Persian authority. But the Yavush will get angry at us. Okay, so the Yavush will get angry at you. He'll send his army against us, horses and chariots. Okay, he'll send his army against you, horses and chariots. And guess what? That'll be your opportunity to establish an army and to defend yourself. And you know what happens when you establish an army and you defend yourself against the chariots and horses of Persia? The result is Jewish sovereignty. The kavod, the glory, the shechina of this Beit HaMikdash will outshine the shechina of the first Beit HaMikdash. You just follow my instructions. And my instructions are to build now when Persia says no. And to assert that authority that is a prerequisite to building a real Beit HaMikdash. Didn't work. It didn't turn out that way. And the local inhabitants went clamoring back to Dayavesh. They're building the temple. Dayavesh went looking for the letter. He found the first letter of Koresh. Not the second letter of Koresh. He found the first letter of Koresh that says the Jews can build the temple. And he sent back a letter that says, okay, I let the Jews build their temple. And now the Jews are celebrating. They have permission. They built the temple and they have permission. And everybody's celebrating except for one person who's crying. Haggai. Because they missed the point. Odachad ma'ati, instead of being a year later, or 2 years later, or 3 years later, is now going to wait, whether it's about 150 years later, if not longer, until the story of the Chashmonaim. When foreign sovereign power of the Beit HaMikdash that began with Cyrus and Dayavish will come to a fruition on the 25th of Kislev, years later, and the establishment of a temple to an altar to Zeus on the altar in the Beit HaMikdash. And finally the Jews will get it straight, and they'll throw the shackles of Persia or the shackles of Greece off. And they'll walk into the Beit HaMikdash and they'll rebuild it. And you know what else they'll do? What did the Gemara say? Kishnichnasu Malchut Beit Chashmonai Lahechal. It's not enough to dedicate the temple. They have to establish Jewish sovereignty. It was Malchut Beit Chashmonai that entered into the temple, not just Chashmonaim. Sovereign, independent for the first time in so many centuries. Hundreds of years they haven't had Jewish sovereignty. 200 according to Chazal, 380, almost 400 according to academic sources of history, but for hundreds of years they have been living under foreign power. The story of Hanukkah is not just about the liberation of the temple. It's about Jewish sovereignty. Let me show you a fascinating Rambam. Go back to the first source page. The story of Hanukkah as it appears in the Rambam. The story of Hanukkah as it appears in the Rambam. Fascinating. We read the Gemara, my Hanukkah, what's Hanukkah? And we saw, what's Hanukkah? They went into the temple and they lit the menorah and those candles lit for 8 days. I still have to come back to that Gemara, by the way. I haven't answered any questions related to that Gemara yet. We have to pull the punchline out of that first and then we'll come back to the Gemara. Says the Rambam, the Bayit Sheni, כשמלכות יוון גזרו גזרות הישראל וביטלו דתם והניחו אותם לעסוק בתורה ובמצוות, when the Greeks wouldn't let, the rest of the story we know, when the Greeks oppressed Israel, the religious tyranny, Pashtu yadam bet mo'namu v'vnatahemu v'nichnasu lehechal. They entered into the temple. Pitzu kol pirtzos v'timu atarot. They defiled the temple. They oppressed them for many years. Listen carefully. Ad sherichem alehem elokei avotenu. Until God had mercy upon them. V'oshi'am mi'adam. And he saved them from their hands. V'tzilam. And he saved, and they were victorious. V'gavru b'nei chashmonai ha-kohanim ha-gdolim. The chashmonaim were victorious. Hargum, they killed the Greeks. V'oshu Yisrael mi'adam, and they saved Israel from their hands. Listen to the next two lines. V'he'emidu melech min ha-kohanim. They established a king from amongst the Kohanim. V'chazra malchut li'Yisrael yeter al matayim shana ad ha-chorban ha-sheni. And they were successful in restoring Jewish sovereignty for 200 years until the destruction of the temple. Then he goes into Nespach Hashem and Halacha Bet. The primary achievement of Chanukah, says the Rambam, was the restoration of Jewish sovereignty. Malchut Beit Chashmonai, with all of its corruption. Rabbi Zayn, Malchut Beit Chashmonai stayed loyal to Torah and stayed loyal to Jewish tradition for 50 years. The rest of the 150 years, it was more corrupt than anything we have ever seen in modern history. It makes all the corruption and all of the challenges we face today child's play compared to the corruption of Beit Chashmonai. A Yanai HaMelech who literally massacred every rabbi who sat on the Sanhedrin. Hyrcanus and Aristobulus in a civil war that ultimately led to the establishment of Herod the Great. Executioner. Malchut Beit Chashmonai we're talking about. Says the Rambam, Yetu Amatayim Shana, Jewish sovereignty. In whatever form it is, Jewish sovereignty. For 200 years. Rabbi said, please, I'm in the middle of a shir. You'll come back, stay outside, just for a few minutes. I just want to come and sit and join us for the shir, but if you just want to wait for a few minutes, I'll be with you in a second. Let's come back to the issue of the Gemara. I asked the question at the beginning of the shir. What happened to Nespach Hashem? What happened to Nespach Hashem? Here's what I think happened to Nespach Hashem. They went into the Beit HaMikdash. They dedicated the Beit HaMikdash. They rebuilt it from scratch. What happened to Shlomo built the Beit HaMikdash? You had sovereignty. You had Malchus. You had Mikdash. You had everything. What was the result? Take a look at the last source. On page 4. K'chalot Shlomo litpalel, when Shlomo finished davening, v'ya'esh yarda me'ashamayim, the fire came down from heaven and filled the temple. V'tochal ha'olah v'azvachim, and it consumed the offerings. U'chvod Hashem maleat habayit, the glory of God filled the temple. So great was the fire that manifested the Shechina in the Beit HaMikdash, v'lo yachlu ha-kohanim lavo Beit Hashem, ki male kvod Hashem et Beit Hashem. They couldn't even enter the temple because the kvod Hashem, the glory of God, filled the temple. V'chol b'nei Yisrael olim be'eledet ha'eshu kvod Hashem al ha-bayit. Everybody saw the fire that came down from heaven and filled the temple. That's Gilu Shechina. That's Hashra'at Shechina. That's Malchus, Beit HaMikdash, in its glory, in its heyday. That's Kadol, Yekvod HaBayit, Hazeh HaRam Min HaRishon. And in the second temple period, Chagai's great Nevuah, the Kavod, the glory, the Shechina of this temple will outshine the Shechina of the first temple. How? Because the light of the menorah lasted 8 days. Did they have Hashra'at HaShechina in the second temple? Did they have a miracle, a manifestation of God's presence? Without question, they certainly did. What is Nespach Hashem, if not Esh Min HaShemayim? What is the miracle of the oil, if not fire from heaven? Every dedication of the temple had a manifestation of the Shechina in the form of Esh. The Mishkan in the Mesa in the desert, the Shlomo Melech's Beit HaMikdash, and the Chashmoneim's rededication of the Beit HaMikdash. But now you, put yourselves into the shoes of the Chashmoneim for a moment. You waged a war to finally do what Haggai HaNavi had told you to do 200, 300, 400 years ago. And you removed the oppression of the Persians or the Greeks from your land. And you've established Jewish sovereignty. And you've rededicated the Beit HaMikdash. And you've done everything they've asked you to do. What are you anticipating? Esh min ha-shamayim. Fire from heaven. You're anticipating what Shlomo HaMelech saw, what the people saw. Fire from heaven. Esh min ha-shamayim. Kvod Hashem al et ha-mishkan chag. I promised them. Gadol ye kvod ha-bayit ha-zechad min ha-rishon. Greater shechina than the first temple. Chag. I promised them. What they got was a flicker of a menorah. The light didn't go out. Shkoyach. Rabbi, I have no doubt that the Chashmoneim cried over Nes Pach Hashem. They anticipated that the Shechina would demonstrate their path, with their loyalty to the path, and would show them that this was it. The Chagai's Nevuah was there, was fulfilled. Wasn't to be. For all kinds of reasons, Beit Sheni never reached what Haggai anticipated it would reach. They got a divine stamp of approval, they got Nes Pach Hashem without question. Says the Rambam, Jewish sovereignty was restored. But what kind of Jewish sovereignty was it? And Nes Pach Hashem to the Chashmoneim was a terrible disappointment. They've established a chag of 8 days of celebration of sovereignty and of the Mikdash. No mention of the Hadlakat Nerot. There's no mention of Hadlakat Nerot. Their focus was on sovereignty. Chanukah was the Yom HaAtzma'ut of Beit Sheni. Chanukah was the Yom HaAtzma'ut of Beit Sheni. Says the Gemara, L'shana acheret kav'um yamim tovim ba'alav hoda. What's l'shana acheret? L'shana acheret, I once heard from my Rebbe. What's l'shana acheret? Not the next year, but the year after. Or the year after that. The Shana Acheret is the first year, or shortly thereafter, after the destruction of the temple. That's why Chanukah is not in the Mishnah. Mishnah is written before the destruction of the temple. After the destruction of the temple, after the Churban, they have a challenge. What's the challenge? After the fall of the Beit HaMikdash, what's the problem? There's nothing left to Chanukah. Jewish sovereignty, says the Rambam, Malchut Yisrael yeto matayim shana, nu and after matayim shana. Sovereignty is gone. The Beit HaMikdash is gone. The Malchus is gone. The Mikdash is gone. The Shechina is gone. What's left? Asks the Gemara, my Chanukah. What do I do with Chanukah? What do we do with Chanukah? Says the Gemara, it's one piece of Chanukah that we can still hold on to. Even in the Galut, even after the destruction of the Churban, even after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, even after the fall of the Malchus, one piece of Chanukah we can still hold on to and must. And that's the Nes Pach Hashem. Because the Nes Pach Hashem demonstrated to us forever that God will never abandon his people. The concept of Hashgachat Hashem, of divine providence, that God will protect us even through the dark nights of an exile from one generation to the next and from one land to the next. And Dafka in the Galut, says the Gemara, the Shana Acheret, the Nes Pach Hashem, which up until that point had been secondary to the achievements of Chanukah, says the Rambam. Yetra matayim shana malchut Yisrael was first and foremost. After the destruction is reversed. And what's left of Chanukah is the Nes Pach Hashem. Until such time as the Nevuah of Haggai will indeed be fulfilled, until we are zochah to reestablish Malchut Yisrael and to build a Mikdash on the foundation of Malchut Yisrael, and then Haggai's Nevuah will take place. Gadol yekvod ha'bayit hazeh ha'acharon min ha'rishon. Then the Shekhinah of the temple will outshine even the Shekhinah in the first temple. Excellent.